This episode of the Off Course Podcast is brought to you by Sax Parente. Visit saxparente.com or follow them at Sax Parente on social to see how their patented ultra-low balance point putter builds can help your putter game using physics, not gimmicks.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, everyone, to a brand new episode of Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards. You can find me on Twitter at CanadanGolf. And with me, once again, he's starting to become a regular on the show, is Nick Sherburn, founder of Club Champion, but also SST Pure guru. And I think part of what we're going to be talking about today is the puring process. Nick, welcome, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me again.
Hey, I did a little checking to see if my nudge towards social got you going the last time you were on the show. Still rocking that 2015 last tweet. What is going on here?
You know, it's funny you should mention that because I was actually thinking about it on my flight home last night. I'm a huge Barstool Sports guy, which can also be a polarizing thing. But I do like what they do a lot of times. And I'm a sports fan and I like sports gambling. So I ran into two Barstool personalities on my flight, and it made me think. I'm like, man, those guys are masters at Twitter. Why can't I do this? So maybe I'm starting. Everybody's nudging me. There's these signs. You're nudging me, and then I get the signs last night. So maybe it's time for me to, you know, actually pick up that phone and do it.
Well, he's at Nick Sherburn on Twitter. You can go blast him. I don't even know if his phone gets the connection on there. But what else is going on? Have you been traveling at all? Have his playing any golf?
Yeah, you know, I've had a little bit of a run here, some work, some pleasure. But yeah, we were this weekend. I went down to Pinehurst, North Carolina, and played in a member guest with Vic Afable, who's a, you know, what I see as one of the godfathers of golf shafts in the industry. I mean, there's a couple of them, but you know, he has VA Composites now. But I mean, he had started Oban. I mean, he was all the way back to Fujikura and Graphite Design, and it was a really fun weekend. And I played so golf, but it was a fun time.
Well, you played golf, and that's all that matters. Did you golf better than you danced? That's the real question.
Yes, I golfed better than I danced. That will always be the case, probably till the day they bury me. So,
there's a story here. You and Vic had a little bit of fun. I think your wife had more fun than anyone. Why did I get to digest two dudes dancing on Twitter?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because there was people like hating on it, and I'm like, you know what? If you knew the story, well, long story short. It was my wife's birthday, so she went down with us to this member guest I was playing with, and, you know, she had fun in Pinehurst, and we asked her what she wanted for. I go, what do you want for your birthday besides this trip? And she goes, she's a huge TikToker. She loves TikTok, and I don't even know what, you know, I know what TikTok is, but I don't even have it on my phone. Obviously, I barely have Twitter on my phone, but she shows us this video, and she's like, I think this video is hilarious. I'm like, okay, that's fine if that's what you want to do. So for 3 days, she hounded us on it. And then finally, Saturday afternoon, I go, Vic, get your daughters. He has a 12- and 13-year-old daughter. I go, they can show us how to do this. We'll do this. And so Sophie and Livy come out, and they go, okay, this is what you – it took like 500 takes to get that thing, and it was still horrible. And now my wife has that video to hold over my head forever, and she's going to probably do that. So,
well, I love it, and it's great to see you out there having fun. It actually, and not to redirect too aggressively, but I've always had a thought on shafts and the progression as they go. You see out there so often right now, you look at the concept of a shaft, and it's always high launch, low spin. I know you see that as you're basically a wall picker over there at Club Champion. You're laughing that people can't see right now. Why is every single shaft on the market claiming high launch, low spin?
Yeah, well, because it sounds so good, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does.
That's what everybody tells you you want. You want that high launch, low spin. The reality of it is not everybody wants high launch, low spin because their swing can't produce it, regardless of how hard they try. But the other thing is there's no, like, if you really talk, and I think one of the reasons why I like Vic so much is if he was on this podcast, he would literally, you know, be laughing as well. Like, they design golf shafts to try to, you know, fit different golfers in different situations. But the reality of saying that a golf shaft is high launch, low spin, he goes, is a very hard thing to prove because everybody's going to swing it differently. So they just think of it as these profiles of, like, you know, there's three sections of the shaft or whatever it is, and one's stiffer, one's firmer, and then this should produce, you know, this, and this should produce this, but until you swing it, you don't know. And so, yeah, the high launch, low spin thing is always funny to me.
You know, I when I first really started getting connected into golf was like around 2000, and I guess it'd be before 2010, I was starting to get really into the concepts of shafts. And, you know, back then, Aldila Green was, you know, the God shaft or whatever you want to call it. Pro Launch Blue, like those ones were the primaries out there. And then you had a company like Miyazaki, if you remember what they did.
Well, I remember Miyazaki. I like those.
They came out with the IFC, which I thought was the coolest thing ever, the International Flex Code, which basically said, here are four elements of the shaft, the four locations of the shaft, and we're going to give them a flex number 1 to 10 in each location. And then through their series, they sort of validated what they were doing. I always loved how easy it was for a golfer to identify what the expectations would be of the shaft. Now, maybe they didn't exactly present, well, you have a firm transition, so you want a stiffer tip section, but you're a guy who you absolutely have to get the shaft to load. So if we soften it up in the hands a little bit, you know, you got a chance of putting a smoother swing on it rather than trying to force it. Do you think that companies would do well to sort of adapt that concept and to help educate people? Or do you think what they're doing right now is good?
No, I loved how Miyazaki did it. In fact, Miyazaki's maybe, you know, because that is going back some years now when they had those that everybody could have, was probably somebody who taught me how to, you know, look at a shaft a little different than an EI curve. Because the EI curve is just so, like, it's hard to identify exactly what's going on because it's this long line, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, what I took from that, and we still do it to this day, is we look at shafts and we train all our fitters. You know, there's three sections to a golf shaft. Instead of four, I just broke it up to three to make it even easier because it almost works the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have your butt section, your midsection, your tip section, and we kind of give it that code internally so that, you know, it makes it a little easier to understand what they're doing. Because to your point, a lot of times, and it doesn't always work this way, but a lot of times if you have a smoother transition, yeah, you probably need a little softer butt section. If you have a little firmer, maybe, or a little faster, maybe a little firmer butt section, you know, things like that. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember having an incredibly tough time trying to get an understanding because I put a pretty quick move on the ball, but I'm relatively smooth throughout. You know, so my speed gets up there, but it's not aggressive. What I find, Nick, is when I get something that I can't load, my swing gets way more aggressive. So, like, for example, the OG, the original, was at the, geez. Wow, I'm drawing a huge blank. It was the Matrix, the black.
Oh, black tie?
Black tie, that's what it was, yeah. So I would put on a driver, like 5,000 RPM, 6,000 RPMs a spin on, like, the double X or whatever it was. And it everyone's like, oh, this is low. It's exactly what you need. And I'm over here like trying to chop wood with the damn thing because I just can't get it to load, you know? And I think there's an identity. And that's what I love about what you guys are doing at Club Champion is you are doing this on your side of it without really explaining too aggressively to the people who are swinging, like, this is what you need. Just swing the club.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's always like we say, let the numbers speak for themselves. You can have an idea, you know, I've read online. You go on all these websites, these manufacturer shaft websites, and it, you know, part of it is like a couple paragraphs where you're like, that's awesome, I'll take that. And then you just have some graphs and some numbers that like 99% of the world will never know what that means.
Right.
And so, and when they try to compare those numbers, if they do try to go in those, they try to compare those numbers from one manufacturer to the next. Here's the kicker, folks. They don't all measure it the same way. So torque's not measured universally the same. Nothing's measured universally the same. And so, you know, it's kind of hard to compare. And so I said to people, I go, there's two ways to do this. One is you can create, you know, Club Champion create its own internal, like, you know, system. There's certainly some competitors that do that. To me, I thought that was a little bit of a waste of time. Only because at the end of the day, none of it's going to matter until your body actually swings the golf club. So,
yeah, that... I've always been fascinated that argument of torque because, you know, shafts aren't a cheap experience. And once you've got one in play, once you've used one, well, it's not like a driver head where you can just, you know, move it on to the next person. There's a lot that goes on between getting it from one club to another, which makes it more difficult. And I feel like there's an opportunity here for an education piece. you guys are one part of it. And I think the companies who are producing them should be another huge part of it is, can we actually explain this product to people? And I know it's a hard thing to say this product is like, and you could do competitors, similar products. That would be huge for golfers. I know they're not going to, because it's effectively showing, you know, the guys who like their shafts what's good for them elsewhere. But, you know, that I just feel like we could do so much more with all this online information that's available. And maybe that's on our end. Maybe that's on the end consumer, the end user end.
Well, I talk with all the shaft manufacturers. I think there's a lot of missing translations where they talk too much to like a club fitter and not enough to an average golfer, because, you know, it is the great divide. And I personally think the better the shaft manufacturers got at speaking to the average user, you know, the easier the club fitter's life would have, because, you know, the customer would have a better sense of what they're buying and what they're getting. And not just trust one person. They got multiple points telling them, hey, this is probably the right thing for me.
So you guys are huge proponents of it, is this SST puring process. I don't know how many people out there are overly familiar with it. I've got quite a few friends who've gone through the Club Champion process and have the sticker on their driver shafts. And do you want to give a quick and dirty on what puring a shaft is?
Well, let me first explain why there's a Club Champion thing in behind me, and then also why I could put on this hat, okay?
So Nick's got a pure hat on right now.
Yeah, it doesn't really fit too well there. But most people may not know this, but it's no secret. Club Champion did purchase SST Pure. We're about 18 months into that purchase, and we've been a licensee since 2000. I was one of the original licensees when they originally launched the company. And I was always big on shaft orientation from the get-go, because, and when I say shaft orientation, people have been looking at, you know, SST Pure is, and we're going to get into it in a minute, but for the short version is, it's finding all the irregularities in the shaft, putting them out of the way, marking that shaft so that we know how to put it in the club so that it performs the same every way. And people have been doing this forever, but they used to call it like shaft spining. And so we used to do that with, you know, back in the 90s and stuff when we first started in this endeavor, and SST Pure just took it to the next level to make it super scientific. But golf did not create it. Golf, you know, fly fishermen have been doing this to rods forever. Archers have been doing this to arrows forever. I mean, anybody using a round tube to precision has some kind of way of looking at or evaluating that tube to make sure it's precise. And so SST just took it to the next level. But a couple of years ago, we've been a huge proponent of it. I've done a lot of studies. Hopefully, we're going to get into some of that, hopefully, in this podcast, about how important this is and how impactful of a technology this is. That when the founder of the company, Dick Weiss, who's a great individual, super smart, great golfer too, you know, wanted to retire. He was in his late 70s. He wanted to get, he needed to move the company. And the problem was with us is golf, as you know, Dan, it's a small place, and we didn't want it to get gobbled up by somebody who was just going to take it and run with it and like maybe not let Club Champion use it. So we said, hey, you know what? We'll buy it. And that way Club Champion's always protected and we can actually further the peering experience. But also, we're not going to, you know, I'm out there selling machines to our competitors all the time. That's why you see licensees all over the world. And we're trying to train them why Club Champion's been so successful with SST, why the PGA Tour's been so successful at SST.
Yeah, I have about a million questions, but I'm going to start. You mentioned that sort of the origin of the process. I have two questions stemming off that. And the first one is, you mentioned spining. I see other terms out there like flowing, things like that. What is so different? You said that it gets way more technical when you use the pure process.
So most shafts these days, and actually for a while, do not have spines. Okay. So, you know, back in the day, a steel shaft was rolled and there might be a seam, and then that's what creates the spine. Sometimes in a graphite shaft back in the day, it's always been where there's these layers of graphite that are rolled around a mandrel. And then occasionally you'd get like a section where they all rolled over the same spot the most. So you got this spine. And so when you put it on this rudimentary, a spining tool is basically there's two round little things. The shaft goes in it. And then literally I just bend the shaft down and I roll it on another until I hear it click. Well, guess what? there could have been multiple spines. There could have been one major spine. And then, by the way, that was just me holding it and marking it with a Sharpie. It was better than doing nothing, but that's what there was. Flowing is the definition of just putting a shaft in a clamp and keep flinging it back mm-hmm. and forth and keep moving it in the clamp until I see that oscillation go back and forth. Again, there's multiple points of where a shaft can go back and forth. So are you identifying the right one, the best one? And then B, again, it's up to me marking it and being precise, and there's a lot of human error. Enter SST Pure, which took it to a scientific level of, you know, the shaft going into this chuck that locks the shaft just like your hands would hold the shaft, putting a weight on there, and then a pneumatic, you know, arm taking it, flinging it back and forth, and turning it and turning it and turning it until it finds this principal plane of oscillation, we call it, just back and forth. But it's the most dominant one. And then marking the shaft itself precisely with a line so that the builder knows how to put the shaft in there. And then you're going to get, you know, your best results.
So principal plane of oscillation, that's already putting the value on the product itself, because I don't know what the hell that means aside from the fact. Well, I kind of do. I'm just messing around. It's a fancy way of saying this. There's a lot of tech that goes into this. There's a reason for it. And it's funny, you actually started to answer that question with the follow-up question I was going to have, which was 20 years ago, shafts looked different. And as we progress technologies and the way shafts are created, does this sort of devalue the process of puring, or does it just tighten the tolerances in total, but you still have the major benefit of having consistency across the board?
I joke, you see companies, and we carry them, like companies like Patterson or TPT, they're like, we don't have spines, you know, you don't need to do that. That's, you know, it's not true. I mean, so shafts are all these layers of graphite put together with resins that go into an oven that get baked, that ultimately go into a centerless grinder, that get sanded, that get painted, that do all these things. And so when you think about all the chances of irregularities happening in a shaft, so just think alone about layers of graphite, layers of graphite, layers of graphite in these resins, you can get pockets. I call them like knots in a tree within those layers of graphite. They're going to cause that shaft. What does a tree do with a knot? It grows around the knot, right? What does a shaft do? It bends around the knot. That's what causes that irregularity. And so, you know, when you're talking about a shaft going through a centerless grinder, there's no perfect way. You're going to get some wall thicknesses that are a little bit thicker on one side and thinner on the other. And a lot of times, if you take a bunch of shafts and you were to look at the butt section of the shaft, you looked at it, you can almost see it with the eye that one side's a little, you know, stronger than the other, if you will. And then the last part I always tell golfers is, we just talked about all this stuff, heating, cooling, sanding, all this stuff. Just like the pool cue, you roll a pool cue across the table, it hops, right? Golf shafts do the same thing. Roll a golf shaft across the table, it's going to hop. It's not perfectly straight. In golf, we call it a runout. Actually, in a lot of pipe things, they call it runout, but it's the runout. And so SST Pure takes all that into consideration. So when we call it the fancy principal plane of oscillation, it's the principal plane at which it's perfect that all those things have been taken into account for. Because like I said, there's multiple planes at which a shaft might go back and forth, but there's one that's perfect that's going to be your most stable, and that's what Purine finds.
Yeah, that's a pretty wonderful answer to it. But it also adds into one of the other questions I was going to have, which would be that, you know, my expectation would be if you buy a $400 graphite shaft, the tolerances are going to be fairly tight as you circulate, the quality of the build process, etc. And you buy a $100 shaft or something that's been something you buy direct from the manufacturer that's already built into the club, is there a likelihood that that $400 shaft is less needing of this experience? Or is there a benefit or less of a benefit between the two?
No, I wouldn't say that, because this isn't like when you talk about quality control, you're talking about weight tolerances, you're talking about frequency tolerances, you're talking about that kind of stuff. You're not talking about some of these kind of more hidden things within the shaft. So when I talked about like all the construction properties and the way a golf shaft's made, you know, they're all made like that. So it's not like they can necessarily control that. It's funny. We have 10 peering machines actually here at headquarters, right behind the corner from me, actually. And if you sat there, and we do that, people come and do that. Trainees, I've had customers, and they just sit there and watch shafts get peered. It's amazing. You'll have $5 shafts that peer, you know, barely need a peering. You'll have $400 shafts that need a ton of peering, and vice versa. Now, I'm sure if I were to run a study of the 10 in last month at Club Champion, we peered 30,000 shafts. If I were to run a shaft, probably a nicer quality shaft probably needed less. It still needed peered, but less help than a cheaper shaft. But I don't have that statistic perfectly in front of me now.
So I guess there's some sort of analysis you receive when you get a peered shaft, and you say less or more. Does that mean you find less of a variance as you circulate the shaft? Is that basically what you're saying?
So when you have your shafts peered, you get a printout, either a printout or it'll be emailed to you. Club Champion will email it to you. But most of the places email it to you now, most of the licensees around the country, around the world. But it'll show you. So it'll show you. It first gives you this graph. It's a fancy graph. Basically, to show you, you know, where the hardest side of the shaft and the softest side of the shaft. And, you know, when you have a big variance, that means that shaft's probably not as good as when you get a shaft that has a straighter line. There's not as this peak hard side, peak soft side. And then, you know, what it's going to show you is the oscillation the shaft had before. If you were to just install it the way the manufacturer wanted you to install, which is typically the logo down or logo up position, whatever you want to call it, so 180 axis. And then, you know, it'll show you after it rotates it to this peered position, you know, how tight that graph was. And it gives you a score and a rating.
That's cool. What about the driver adapters right now, or the fairway adapters that you're forced to rotate? Is the idea that you get fit into a certain location on the head and then hope to stick with that? Or is that sort of devaluing the process in total?
No, it makes it a little muckier, if you will. Like if everybody had an adapter like Callaway's OptiForce adapter where you can rotate it, it doesn't change the orientation of the shaft, that would be great. For the ones that don't do that, we fit you, we pure it. If we need to tweak it, we're going to tweak it, and then we're going to pull the shaft and reset it at the pure position. I can't speak for all our licensees at SST Pure. I can speak for the Club Champion as a licensee. If you buy the club from us, we end up rotating your adapter. You end up rotating your adapter. You bring it back to us. Give us a day. We'll pull the shaft, reorient it to the pure position.
That's a big commit, because that's not a small amount of work. I mean, obviously, it's easier than what I do in my what I call the Canadan custom shop downstairs in the basement, but... And that's an incredible thing to offer those who come to you. And we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. The idea is the more accurate you are, the easier your world is in the future. So,
well, and here's the thing. It's too important. And actually, you probably have more questions, but I love getting in. We did a study, and if I look like I'm looking off, I still have to read it because, I mean, it's too good not to read the study we did.
Sure.
And it's quick, but we brought in golfers ranging handicaps. And we built 2 6 irons, okay? Exact same heads, exact same shaft, grip, loft, lie, swing weight, frequency, you name it, it was all the same. It was a steel shaft, and we peered one, and then we put one in at the random point. Didn't even know, just randomly glued it in there because it's a steel shaft with no markings or whatever. And we painted 1 6 purple and 1 6 yellow, and it was only me and my build shop manager knew which was which. And we had a third party come in and run the study. And they had the golfer swing each iron. I can't remember what time. It was like 10 hits with each. And each golfer, one would start with the peered, one would start with the unpeered. So it wasn't like every golfer started the same. All shots counted. And, you know, one of the questions was, does peering improve distance? And what we found is, the testers gained over 7 yards of total distance. Okay. So that's nearly a full club of distance, despite the fact that 2 clubs had the same loft. Okay. Pretty interesting stuff. And people go, and I actually learned something from this study because I've seen them hit longer. I just never realized why they hit it longer. And what we found is players swung the peered club nearly 1 mile per hour faster and generated an extra 2.8 miles per hour of ball speed. And so that night, as you know, we look at this data, I'm like, 1 mile per hour faster. Why would that be? Like, just all we did was pure it. The moment went out of my head. You know, if you have this shaft that's, you know, working against you, bending out of plane, right? it's the same. We kind of started the conversation talking about shafts and how you had to work harder sometimes when you had a stiffer butt section shaft.
Yeah.
You have a pured shaft that if you have an unpured shaft, your body is working to fight the forces that are causing that shaft to get out of plane. When you have a pured club that's staying on plane and working with you, now you can swing it faster. The other thing is why do you have, so you have 1 mile per hour more club head speed because you can swing freer. And we created a little tool, we call it the wiggle stick. And we show golfers this in the stores where like if you wiggle this stick and it's real easy, and then all of a sudden it's a flat stick and all of a sudden I turn it, listen to this. Listeners, take your yardstick, hold it in your hand flat, waggle it real easy. Now all of a sudden turn that yardstick at like a 45 degree angle, hold it, try to waggle it. You're going to find that you have to fight that yardstick because it's wanting to go all over the place. That's puring. That's what puring does. And so not only does it create more club head speed, but now because that hard plane is towards the target, towards the ball, you actually have a more stable tip section coming at with more speed and more force. And that's why you get more ball speed.
That's pretty crazy. So at your club champion locations, are the shafts on the wall pured?
They are not. And so that's why, and people go all the time, why don't you do it? Our first couple systems were all pured. It is almost impossible to not have a million, because we use our little fitting adapters, right? The little club connects. And there's like whatever they are, octagons. In order to line up everything perfectly, your fit would take forever. And then we always have to make sure every demo is perfect. And when our demos get hit a million times a day like they do now, we're constantly re-gluing adapters and tips. It was a nightmare. Couldn't do it. So we tell golfers all the time, we're like, listen, all peering is going to do is what you see here, which is awesome, we're going to take it to the next level from there. So if you like this, you're going to get better. But it just became a logistics issue. It's just, if you were a one man shop and that's how we used to be, we could handle it. But as we grew, puring every demo, because you do have to have it lined up. I mean, you come back here and pure a bunch of shafts, five degrees can mean the difference between a pure and undegreed shaft. And I know people think that's nuts, but if you came here and saw it, you'd believe it because you saw it. It's not like a made up thing.
So is puring one of those things where over time as shafts change their properties, does it benefit at all to have a shaft pured a second time, maybe a year or two down the road, or is it pretty consistent?
It's pretty consistent. I mean, there's an argument that could be true. Most golfers probably aren't going to keep it long enough, but most golfers probably don't play enough. If you're a heavy, you know.
Are you talking about me again, or are you on your right. Q3 bag already?
Yeah, right. So that's my point is, like, for me, I'm only on my first one this year, but we'll have more. but yeah, the technical answer is there's an argument that could happen. The odds of that happening are very rare, but the amount of golf people, normal players play and change golf clubs.
Well, I want to talk about, obviously, graphite and steel is a curious one. You mentioned the different ways of designing and steel and in a lot of ways bent around and forged in the center or welded or whatever you want to call it. Is there a greater concern on graphite or steel, as graphite has the resin potential bumps and steel just has a whole lot of different varieties? Would puring be more valuable for one or the other?
No, it's funny. I go back and forth on this because, steel's constructed a couple different ways, whether they roll it around and then, I don't know, they call it some kind of like the friction. It's not like a weld, but I don't know what they have a name for it. But I can
they remember. Merge it, yeah.
Yeah, some kind of crazy stuff. And then they have what they call extruding, which they just pull. It's like almost like a spaghetti machine for shafts where they literally just jam steel through this thing. And that's pretty amazing to watch as well. But no, they both have irregularities, because like with steel shafts, when you're doing that stuff, you're going to get irregular wall thicknesses. In the ones that merge, you're going to get some things, the run out in a steel shaft. I actually almost think because the heating and cooling, and everybody knows how metal kind of, deforms in heating and cooling, you get a little bit more of that run out, not straight shafts in steel. So I think there's an argument on both sides. I don't think one's more than the other. And I tell people they should do it to both. It's both equally as important.
Well, let's talk about tour adaptation a little bit, because you had mentioned, and I saw commentary on some of the Pure socials or on the website saying that there is quite a, there are quite a few guys out there who do pure their shafts. Can you give me an idea of how many are doing it? And as a follow-up to that, why in the hell guys who are playing for that kind of money aren't all doing it?
Yeah, so we've SST Pure has won $2 billion over the 20 years of its existence. We have a machine on Scotty G's tour trailer out there on tour, and there's a machine out there every week. Couple things. Yeah, some of the biggest names in golf. We don't pay anybody. It's hard for us to advertise the crap out of it. Again, SST Pure is a very small company. But, you know, Tiger Woods, Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson, yeah, I mean, you can go up and down the names, Phil Mickelson, they pure their stuff. And every week I would say we have somewhere between 10 and 20 folks pure their equipment. But I can give you like an interesting story from last week. You know, we were talking, our tour reps were talking to Justin Thomas, and he's really wants to, he's one of the guys that hasn't pured his clubs, and he's really wants to pure his golf clubs. That being said, he's hesitant because he's playing well and he's made a lot of money with the clubs he's got. And so, you know, everybody has these superstitions and things, and it's getting over it. Now, I think we'll break him down and we'll get it done because he's seeing some of these other folks do it. But, you know, I always say sometimes tour is a little bit of an interesting thing, and I'm going to date myself a little, and some of the listeners aren't going to get it, but Tom Cruise once said in a movie, you know, you build it, I drive it. Do you know what that movie is?
Days of Thunder? It's got to be. Yeah.
You build it, I drive it. There's a lot of Toms out there on the tour where they just like literally hit it. And if it's the shot they want, they're like good to go. Don't need to know anything more than that. And so, you know, they let these tour, you know, trailer guys kind of really drive it. And so we don't have peering on those trailers. They literally have to take the clubs from the TaylorMade trailer over Scotty's trailer, peer the shafts, bring them over. That just doesn't happen. We have to get to the players directly. And so, like I said, it's still very common on the PGA Tour, and a lot of the weekend, week out. The hardest part for us is we don't pay anybody. If you haven't noticed, a lot of tour players don't like stickers or any kind of things on their golf clubs. So getting our little pure sticker on there. Brad Snedeker was awesome. He always had it on there. Kuchar usually leaves it on there. Bryson DeChambeau leaves his stickers on typically, but most of them do not. They take it off. So.
Yeah, I thought Bryson would be an interesting conversation, but I also thought it'd be fun to draw the directional comparison to a guy like Fred Couples, who I've heard wants nothing to do with his numbers. He wants club in hand on the range, and it either works or it doesn't. He'd be an interesting study to say, I'm going to give you 2 6 irons that look the same. Which one do you like better? I'd love to hear that story. But then Bryson, on the other hand, I mean, that guy is basically like, I want to see the code that put this machine together, you know?
Oh, yeah. He's asked a lot of questions, and that's fine. I mean, that's the beauty. See, that's what I love about SST. When you know, a lot of people are like, oh, flowing will get you close. You'll get this. I mean, we've done so many studies. It's insane. And then when you see the math behind what this machine does, which is part of the secret sauce, so we don't show it. But when you, if you were to actually, like, when you're acquiring a company, like we acquired that company, and you're doing the due diligence, and all of a sudden you see what went into creating the code and everything that to pure a golf shaft, you're like, okay, this I already knew this worked, but there's like hardcore math behind this. So way beyond my skill set. So
would it upset you to know that I've never used a pured shaft?
A little bit.
Yeah.
if you listen to my podcast last week, Fits with the Founder, you would have, the intro literally said, if you don't pure your shafts, you're doing it wrong. And I'm going to be your mom and dad and tell you you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. I've got about 30 minutes of why haven't I already in here. But I do want to follow up one more thing with this whole process. And this is, it's not to say that you guys are devaluing everything that club or shaft companies are doing. But do you feel like they are impacted emotionally by you saying there is a condition in this shaft that you need to get the maximum performance out of it?
So it's funny, and you know my background, and the listeners are probably starting to get it now that I'm becoming a regular, apparently.
Yeah.
You know, I've been in the industry a long time. I know every shaft manufacturer. I'm friends with all of them. Next week, I got a golf date with the Fuji guys. But, you know, and so, like, they hate it. they're like, they won't disprove it because they can't disprove it. But they're also not going to tell you that they like it, because that would be admitting that they have a product that's not perfect. That's okay. Understand that, like, you know, when you build a golf shaft, and I've kind of, you know, brought you into it, and if you ever came to work at Club Channel, we have a lot of videos that our trainees watch on actually walking through a production plant of a graphite golf shaft. If they were to sit there and pure every golf shaft that they built before they painted it, you wait weeks for golf shafts, because a puring machine right at the moment is such a small machine. It costs me $29,000 every time I build a puring machine. It's not something we just spit out, right? And so the production time, and we're talking to manufacturers, I'm talking to the biggest OEMs. People want to pure. It's figuring out how to create the machine in a more economical time savings. Because fear at Club Champion, for example, we peered 30,000 shafts last month was 30,000 shafts. I have 10 machines working 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. to make that happen. So it's not an easy, inexpensive process. And so, you know, the manufacturers don't love that we sit there and say that there might be irregularities in there, but they also can't deny that there are. And, you know, there's this world where someday, hopefully, we both just line up and we can make it happen and everybody gets a great golf shaft from the start.
Yeah, you got to wonder how that is from a large club company standpoint. Is they know there's a bit of a variance, and they know if they make two clubs, they might, that are same loft, same experience, same everything, they could be a different experience. I'm sure there's an absolute want there for them to have complete nutter tolerance in their shafts, but like you said, I can't imagine it's the most easily accomplished thing, especially in the amount of units that goes out purely from, let's say, a large Callaway, TaylorMade, you know, Titleist, one of the big companies selling product.
So I talk to those companies a lot, and you know, you'll hear from the sales division a little bit, oh, puring doesn't matter, when one of their accounts goes, well, Club Champion or TrueSpec or Cool Clubs or somebody peers and not pured, and they're like, oh, puring doesn't matter, right? And it's funny, because I'll just say to them, show me your data. But the reality of it is I know, because I talk to the engineers at those companies. And actually, we did the study that I was spitting out facts from earlier. That was a player. That was the individual players. But we had been doing studies with robots, golf laboratories, which is like the gold standard of testing, robot testing. It's who most of the OEMs use, Callaway and all them, for their testing outside when they want a third party. And, you know, that the studies we did with that, a lot of them have been with OEMs that are interested in this technology and want to do it. Again, it comes down to the cost and time thing that we just haven't figured out yet, because, you know, at our level, it's hard to keep up. Imagine at their level, it's just a very time consuming thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, you've kind of sold me here. You know, it's I love the idea that there is potential for better as we go through and try to fit ourselves. And you know, obviously you'd recommend going to one of your locations to do it all there, but you know, I've got a handful of shafts here. I try and find the right one, and the idea of twisting the adapter a little bit to get it even more out of it, especially when I find the right one, is super appealing to me.
Well, I think, Dan, there's an interesting thing you just kind of hit to the side and you may not even know exists, but you don't have to just do a new golf shaft. You can bring in your existing club, have us take it apart, put it back together in the pure position. I think a lot of golfers don't get that they think, oh, I got to buy a new club and have it pured. No. You can bring us your existing club. We call that a retro pure. We take it apart. Actually, you can go on the SST website and go to the shop section, and for $75, you'll send your club into SST pure. They'll rip it apart. They'll pure it. They'll put a brand new grip on it, and they'll ship it all for $75. It's all in there. And so, you know, you don't have to do that. And I tell people, you know, back 20 years ago when people really thought it was snake oil, I would be like, hey, you all have a club in your bag you don't like, right? Maybe you didn't hit well or whatever. It's a 7-iron, it's the 8-iron, it's a hybrid or whatever. Send that club to be pured first. Have it pured, see what happens. And a lot of times that would make a believer out of people.
You know, this is a conversation I've seen on the THP forums. The community discusses their experiences with different clubs all the time. And I remember something from this week specifically where someone was talking about their 9-iron having a totally different number than their 8 and their pitching wedge. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, I'm sure the flex is the same. I'm sure the lofts, if you haven't got them checked yet, are pretty close. maybe, you know, maybe it's time to get those things pured.
Yeah, absolutely. I always tell people, I go, what? Try one. Just try one.
Start with driver,
like,
right?
I sound like a drug dealer, right? Like, just try it. It'll be good. No, yeah, because I mean, it's, but no, it's the real deal. And like I said, I'm the biggest skeptic there is in the planet. And if you talk to a lot of the vendors, they're always like, Nick's, you know, always asking a lot of inquisitive questions, whether they're good or bad, they're inquisitive. And, you know, and hearing was one of those things. And we've gone through so many studies with robots and humans. And like I kind of alluded to and told you some, and a lot of them are on our website, you know, sstpure.com. But it's the real deal Holyfield, and it just makes no sense not to do it. It's just such an easy thing.
Well, I've blasted you for an entire week on Club Champion. We've blasted you an entire week on SST Pure. There's got to be something about golf you want to talk about for a little bit. What is appealing to you this week? Is the PGL, this whole conversation, is that on your radar at all?
It is. It is on my radar, and because I think it's all ridiculous to kind of argue it. Like, it's just it's a business, right? In my opinion, it's a business. I guess you could argue this, you know, oh, you're hurting the game. I don't know. Everything in life has competition. Club Champion has cool clubs, TruSpec, Golf Galaxy, PGA Superstar. Why does the PGA Tour have to be the only game in town? Like, you know, by the way, the PGA Tour is sitting on mountains and mountains of money. Guess what? If somebody comes along and creates a good tour that, you know, can get sponsors and get players, and that's where people want to go, so be it. Like, I'm not going to fault a player for that. You can't tell me that that's tarnishing a legacy. Like, it's just, you know, I'm going to play with the best players in the world and make the most money. That's my career. That's what I'm going to do. So I don't know. I'm of the fan. If they can make it happen and get it, draw the attention, then good for them.
See, I like that a guy like Rory has stepped up and made it clear his perspective on it. And, you know, a guy like Rory's made his money. Obviously, he's done incredibly well. But he said it's definitely feels like a money grab and it's kind of gross. And I'm not perfectly quoting there, but that's the basic extent of what I read.
See, that's where, like, to me, it's a little bit interesting, right? Yeah, sure. It's a little bit of a money grab, but also, come on, Rory, your whole life's a money grab. And then, you know,
that Nike deal, right?
To me, it's like, okay, you can go play, no offense, you can go play the Valspar, and there's like, you know, whatever, four of the top 15 in the world there. Or you can go play this super tournament or whatever, where there's, you know, the top 30 in the world are playing every event. And it's like, okay, Rory, which one are you telling me you want to win? You can't tell me you'll go play the Valspar and think that win is better than beating the top 30 in the world. But the equation would be is the World Golf Championships is supposed to be that. So, you know, the argument is that, well, what, the World Golf Championships aren't good enough for you? Okay, fair enough. Check on that one. But, yeah, it's just not that big of a deal to me. I think if they can create it, people watch it, they get sponsors, great player, the best players in the world are doing it. So be it. I just think that's going to be the toughest part is getting them all lined up.
So how do you think this looks for golf history? Obviously, people are chasing numbers. The record books are pretty solidified with the ridiculous stuff done by, you know, the greats of the past. And we have such strong fields now that there's a good chance a lot of those won't be broken anyway. And I'm making big claims here, obviously, and they're pretty reasonable, let's be honest. But do you think if PGL becomes a thing, do you think those wins are validated, or do you think they are looked separately?
No, I think it at the end of the day, I think if you're to look at like golfers like prolific wins and like, you know, whether it was, you know, on the PGA Tour, European Tour, when they go to Australia, I don't even know what that's called. I guess it's European Tour, Asian Tour. I mean, that's like saying one tour over the other. I think great wins are great wins. And so when you look at history, that's what will define a player. And, you know, that's just, you know, I think the PGA Tour can easily solve the Super League by just allowing the best players in the world to get their money grab by having, you know, appearance fees on the PGA Tour. You do that and you can probably, you know, knock out this Super League idea in about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I did see a little bit of something where the tour is saying they were going to start offering appearance fees, and I gave them a little bit of grief for that because I thought, you know, let's get some more money into the feeder leagues. And they obviously heard me because I guess the purse and Korn Ferry Tour is going up over the next two seasons, which is really good to see, you know, our budding talent get a better payout. But the one thing I thought was pretty funny, Nick, and you can certainly react as well, is the tour effectively gets on a call with the players and says, if you do this, you're out. You don't get to be a part of our thing anymore. And a lot of people are saying that's a huge overreaction. I thought based on everything, of course the tour is going to overreact. They haven't been pushed like this before. There's always been this sort of level playing field, and suddenly you have this group just, you know, with money flowing out of their foreheads saying, this is what we're going to do. You can just deal with it. Of course they're going to react. Was there any other way for the tour to be?
FYI, the PGA Tour has money flowing out of their foreheads. So that's and no knock on the PGA Tour. I like the PGA Tour. We work with the PGA Tour on, you know, on the SST and the Club Champion side. But let's not sit there and paint them as this organization that doesn't have the resources and capital to do whatever they want as well. And so I guess when I look at it, you know, when we talk about feeder tours, we talk about the, you know, all that stuff, they could solve all this if they just opened up the purse, you know, purse strings a little bit. Mm-hmm. They're just not, you know, they've had a good thing going for a long time. And so, you know, that's what they're going to do. I do think it was an overreaction. I don't think they'll ever do that. I don't even know if they could actually, but I mean, listen, if they want to have a six event tour and you play both and the best players, but just let people play. What's the difference? I don't know.
Well, it's funny how much more interested people are in that than the Olympics. So,
yeah, well, you know, I think the Olympics, that's an interesting one. I was thinking about that this year too. It's just so hard because I don't know any of the people anymore. Like used to, like, I feel like the media used to make characters out of the Olympians and you used to know who Olympians were. I feel like it's harder these days because there's so much media and so much sports out there that you don't know them. And so Olympics just gets kind of drowned where, like, at least this, you're like, okay, well, you're going to have like Dustin Johnson, Koepka, and like Rory going at it on a weekly basis. That'll be cool. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to see a group come out and not necessarily be, you know, tournament based, but more like we are coming out as the match play kings of golf. And, you know, we had the match and we had, I think my favorite one was JT and Tiger going at it up at Payne's Valley. Just, it was Rory.
I love
that.
That's
it was so good.
Talked about the other day. I actually, the Zurich Championship, not many people get into that, right? I like it. I like that team event. I liked watching that final nine holes, and I barely get to watch golf anymore with my life. But that was really cool. I was saying, what if you had, like, random events where it was, like, a six-point scotch game or something like a hammer-wolf game where the pros were doing that, and you're watching them do that? To me, that would be pretty awesome and entertaining.
I think you put the top X number of guys up there. You get them in groups of two. So you pick your partner. We're going to pitch you against each other. And the final winner wins whatever at the end of the year. Do however many it is, 10 events or whatever it may be to get to the finals. And I think that'll sell it crazy. I would be super interested to watch it, especially if they're all mic'd up and having a good time. And I think for the guys, they do get their payout, but make the winnings for charity so they can still go out there and have a good time and not feel like they have to, you know, cutthroat each other. Because then you get the, wow, you eat Domino's for dinner, Rory. Those conversations that are unbelievable. Or JT saying he can't putt with Tiger on the written on the golf ball, you know, that kind of stuff. That was, those are the memorable stuff for me that that I don't want to lose out on. And that's I hope that's where golf can go, because I mean, think of the Skins game. That was I remember my dad watching the Skins game, and I sat in the room with him. He's like, shut up, they're talking, I want to hear what they're saying.
I used to love this game. It used to be one of my favorite things. Or what were they, Shell's Wonderful World of Golf, stuff like that. It was really good stuff. And I mean, they've tried to create it with, you know, like what Tiger and Phil had last year, and some of that's good, but I think they could, you know, it used to be like a more normal thing, like it was count on it. Now it's just like when there's a random person that wants to put up like $2 million for it to winning, you know. But
well, speaking of that, what's it, BK and Portnoy are going up, so that'll be fun to watch.
That's gonna be interesting.
So hey, Nick, it's been a great nearly hour here talking about SST Pure, getting a better idea of what you guys are doing with it at Club Champion, and I thank you for that. You know, this part of the episode is where I ask you if you have any questions for me. Have you been sitting on anything for the last couple weeks?
No. Let's see here. Dan, where are you? I think I know the answer to this, but before I started doing this podcast, I didn't know you that well. And again, no knock. I just don't I'm in my own world, man.
Yeah, that's fine.
I got to get on Twitter later. I don't know. Like, I'm not in that whole thing. So, Dan, where are you from?
So, I grew up in Ontario, Canada. I moved to Cincinnati in high school. Amazing time to move countries, by the way. Right in the middle of high school. Really good for your development. I went to Miami University here in Ohio and stuck around. I said Ohio is definitely nowhere to leave. Married a Cleveland girl, and here we are at an Arnold Palmer design oasis in just north of Cincinnati. And so far as I can tell, despite trying to move south, I don't think I'm going anywhere anytime soon. So,
you've never had an interest to go back to Canada?
Yes and no. I think things are so different up there, and golf has become such a passion for me that you definitely lose some of the golf season going up there.
Yeah.
Especially where I was from in Ontario, lake effect snow is not a polite thing. So
I think I read, is Ontario golf still closed for COVID right now? And it's like a big thing.
It is. And this, we don't normally talk COVID on the cast, but, yeah, I think there's a pretty significant uproar going on in Ontario. And if a couple of my dad's buddies are up there listening right now, I feel for you, because I am going to be golfing. I golf this weekend. I'm going to golf next weekend. And you guys can email me and get mad at me if you want.
But have you played Memorial? I'm taking it you have.
I have not.
Whoa.
I have not had a chance to get up to Muirfield. I haven't even played many of those courses. I think the most memorable for me in Ohio would be probably Scioto in
I've heard of that.
Columbus, which is one of the oldest clubs out there. It felt like I was playing with some ghosts, super cool design. NCR, just south of Dayton, is a really cool spot. The National Cash Register, they've got a pretty impressive resume there. But yeah, no, I haven't had a chance to Muirfield it up. You'll have to come down and take me
out. I was going to say, I haven't done Firestone or Muirfield. That's
me neither.
Something we should do.
Yeah, we should.
I'm sure I got a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend that can help us get there.
I'm in. And we can do a podcast on site talking about the Scotch game you're going to make me play. So.
Yeah. And how I shot 90 and lost all my money. And now okay.
That's perfect. Yeah. I need peering and I need golf lessons before I do that. But, I'm super down for that. Awesome. Well, hey, Nick, thank you so much. As always, you're a great, friend of THP, and I look forward to doing this again with you soon.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan. Take care.
All right. Everyone out there, if you are playing golf this weekend, play with peered shafts and have fun.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.